Hello, everybody. This is Paul Douglas Boyer, the Madman Machine Show 102 for early March. It's time to whip inflation now. According to Wikipedia, whip inflation now. When was an attempt to spur a grassroots movement to combat inflation by encouraging personal savings and disciplined spending habits in combination with public measures urged by U.S. President Gerald Ford. People who supported the mandatory and voluntary measures were encouraged to wear WIN buttons, perhaps in hope of evoking in peacetime the kind of solidarity and volunteerism symbolized by the V campaign during World War II. Well, I'm just old enough to remember these WIN buttons. For some reason, I remember going to a department store, and maybe they were handing out these buttons there. Wikipedia continues, the campaign began in earnest with the establishment of the 93rd Congress of the National Commission on Inflation, which Ford closed with an address to the American people asking them to send him a list of 10 inflation-reducing ideas. 10 days later, Ford declared inflation public enemy number one before Congress on October 8, 1974. In a speech entitled Whip Inflation Now, announcing a series of proposals for public and private steps intended to directly affect supply and demand in order to bring inflation under control. WIN buttons immediately became objects of ridicule. Skeptics wore the buttons upside down, explaining that NIM stood for No Immediate Miracles, or Non-Stop Inflation Merry-Go-Round, or Need Immediate Money. In his book, The Age of Turbulence, Alan Greenspan, as the chairman of the Council of Economic Advisers, recalled thinking, "This is unbelievably stupid," when Whip Inflation Now was first presented to the White House. Of course, the irony of that button campaign is, where did the money come from to print all those buttons? So I don't know where we are headed then, obviously, since I'm not one that advocates predicting the stock market, but I have read people say that we are headed for inflation. But I've also read people say we're headed for deflation. I've also read people who say we're going to have both deflation and inflation at the same time. So I was just listening to the Resource Investor podcast, and they said gold does well no matter whether there's inflation or deflation. So I don't know. If you believe that, then I guess you have to believe that unless we stay the same, then gold will do well. I've been listening to Jim Rogers talk, and he said, did you see his interview on CNBC the other day? They asked him, what would you do if you were Fed chairman? He said, I would shut down the Federal Reserve and then resign. Oh, well, he has been right so far. That book on commodities and, of course, his call on China has been good so far, except for now the stocks in Asia are taking a correction, it looks like. So what do we do? Where do we invest at these times? I wrote a posting out at the MadmanMachine.com blog site. Where do we run when the dark clouds come? And I encourage you to go take a read on that. One thing's for certain, and that is picking individual stocks won't do you any good in the long run. You need to be an index investor. And for that, I recommend that you turn to our sponsor, Index Funds Advisors. Go to look at IFA.com. All along, they've been advocating diversify your investments across international markets, emerging markets, and including large cap, small cap, micro cap, and value stocks. Increasing exports from the United States, now that the dollar's getting lower and lower, it's going to be easier for people in other countries to buy our products. So make sure you're invested everywhere. Let Index Funds Advisors help you manage your financial freedom. Index Funds Advisors, matching people with portfolios. Go to IFA.com, take their risk capacity survey, especially in these risky times. Find out how much risk you can handle with your investments. Let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. And I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble. And for the selected guru, I'll give you a little background on their investment philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Mad Money Machine 102 is... I'm going to tell you after I read you a quote from this person. And this person wrote an article. I'm not going to tell you when it was written. but I will after I read it to you. And it's a little bit lengthy, so be patient while I get to the end. I got three paragraphs I'm going to read here. And then we'll try to guess who wrote this. All right, these are the last three paragraphs in the article. Under a gold standard, the amount of credit that an economy can support is determined by the economy's tangible assets, since every credit instrument is ultimately a claim on some tangible asset. But government bonds are not backed by tangible wealth, only by the government's promise to pay out of future tax reserves, and cannot easily be absorbed by the financial markets. A large volume of new government bonds can be sold to the public only at progressively higher interest rates. Thus, government deficit spending under a gold standard is severely limited. The abandonment of the gold standard made it possible for the welfare statists to use the banking system as a means to an unlimited expansion of credit. They have created paper reserves in the form of government bonds, which, through a complex series of steps, the banks accept in place of tangible assets and treat as if they were an actual deposit, i.e., as the equivalent of what was formerly a deposit of gold. The holder of a government bond or of a bank deposit created by paper reserves believes he has a valid claim on a real asset. But the fact is that there are now more claims outstanding than real assets. The law of supply and demand is not to be conned. As the supply of money, of claims, increases relative to the supply of tangible assets in the economy, prices must eventually rise. Thus, the earnings saved by the productive members of the society lose value in terms of goods. When the economy's books are finally balanced, one finds that this loss in value represents the goods purchased by the government for welfare or other purposes, with the money proceeds of the government bonds backed by bank credit expansion. In the absence of the gold standard, there is no way to protect savings from confiscation through inflation. There is no safe store of value. If there were, the government would have to make its holding illegal, as was done in the case of gold. If everyone decided, for example, to convert all his bank deposits to silver or copper or any other good, and thereafter declined to accept checks as payment for goods, bank deposits would lose their purchasing power, and government-created bank credit would be worthless as a claim on goods. The financial policy of the welfare state requires that there be no way for the owners of wealth to protect themselves. This is the shabby secret of the welfare statists' tirades against gold. Deficit spending is simply a scheme for the confiscation of wealth. Gold stands in the way of this insidious process. It stands as a protector of property rights. If one grasps this, one has no difficulty in understanding the statists' antagonism toward the gold standard. Now, who do you think wrote that? Was it Peter Schiff? Now, he might agree with it, but he didn't write it. Was it Warren Buffett? Well, he might agree with it, but he didn't write it. Was it Alan Greenspan? Yes, it was. And Alan Greenspan is our guru for show 102. Alan Greenspan, in 1967, when he was affiliated with Ayn Rand's movement, had an essay that appeared in her book, Capitalism, the Unknown Ideal. His essay was called Gold and Economic Freedom. And also in that article, he said, "Stripped of its academic jargon, the welfare state is nothing more than a mechanism by which governments confiscate the wealth of the productive members of society to support a wide variety of welfare schemes. A substantial part of the confiscation is affected by taxation, but the welfare statists were quick to recognize that if they wished to retain political power, the amount of taxation had to be limited, and they had to resort to programs of massive deficit spending. That is, they had to borrow money by issuing government bonds to finance welfare expenditures on a large scale. What I'd like to know is what happened to Alan Greenspan in the intervening decade or so. And so I pulled up this article on a website that advocates buying gold, of course, usagold.com. And at the top of the article, at the top of the reprint of the article, rather, they say, can this be the same Alan Greenspan who today chairs the most important central bank of them all? Of course, he's replaced by Ben Bernanke since then. It says, again, you might be surprised. R.W. Bradford writes in Liberty Magazine that as Fed Chairman, Greenspan once recommended to a Senate committee that all economic regulations should have fixed lifespans. Oh, I love that talk. Senator Paul Sarbanes, Democrat of Maryland, accused him of playing with fire, or indeed throwing gasoline on the fire, and asked him whether he favored a similar provision in the Fed's authorization. Greenspan coolly answered that he did. Do you actually mean, demanded the senator, that the Fed should cease to function unless affirmatively continued? That is correct, sir, Greenspan responded. Bradford continues, the senator could scarcely believe his ears. Now my next question is it your intention that the report of this hearing should be that Greenspan recommends a return to the gold standard? Greenspan responded, I've been recommending that for years. There's nothing new about that. It would probably mean there is only one vote in the Federal Open Market Committee for that, but it is mine. And I'm reminded recently on when Ben Bernanke testified before Congress just last week or so, Ron Paul was asking him some questions about the Federal Reserve and how they were creating inflation. And Ben Bernanke said, look, it's up to you guys in Congress to get rid of the Federal Reserve if that's what you want to do. Basically saying, hey, I'm just the guy running the place. It's up to you to get rid of it. Well, fat chance of that ever happening. Unless house prices fall by 70%, as does the stock market. The resulting cataclysm might get Congress into action to fix things. Well, congratulations, Alan Greenspan. You're the guru on Mad Men Machine Show 102. Well, it looks like Congress is taking up the question of whether we should modernize our coins after all. On Tuesday, March 11th, they held a hearing in the Rayburn Office Building to provide the subcommittees an opportunity to closely examine measures that could save taxpayers well over $100 million annually by restoring a proportionate economic relationship between each coin's metal worth and its face value. Well, I don't have a copy of the testimony yet. I'll have a link to the website where you can keep looking to see if they are reprinting the hearings. The Honorable Edmund C. Moy, the director of the United States Mint, was on the panel. They do have an archive of the video available, and I've got a link to that in the show notes. You can watch the hearing. Not much to watch, really. They're mostly talking about how to change the composition of the money.
But why don't you just get rid of them? Just get rid of them altogether. Pennies, nickels, and quarters. And maybe make a new half dollar if you have to. Let's pull something out of the Mad Money Machine tool crib. Well, I've talked on and on endlessly about inflation. So if you'd like to figure out what inflation is doing to your wallet, you can go to measuringworth.com. You can enter the initial year, the initial amount, and the desired year up to 2007. And it'll tell you how much money you have today to equal that money that you started with. So for example, let's type in 1987. Let's put in $1, and let's put in as the final year 2007. Hit enter, and the answer is $1.83 in the year 2007 has the same purchase power as $1 in the year 1987. And that's incredible to think about. In 20 years, a dollar's value is almost cut in half. There are a lot of other tools out at measuringworth.com. For example, the price of gold from the year 1257 all the way to 2006. They have some calculators on stock growth rates, and it has something called the value of a U.S. consumer bundle, which is the average annual expenditure of consumer units. Expenditures are for goods and services. Also included are gifts and charitable contributions, as well as insurance premiums and pension contributions. The value of the consumer bundle is expressed in dollars is not corrected for inflation. And so if you entered 1987 and went to 2007, the value of a consumer bundle in dollars in 1987 was $24,414. 2006, it was double that, $48,000. So go put in the year of your college graduation and then put in the ending year of 2007 and see how much less your money is worth today than it was then. That's our tool in the crib for this week, measuring worth. Like most of the other tools I've given you so far, this one is free. So I continue to wonder why people think they can pick the hot stock and make more money in stocks in the long run by trading them around than just by simply investing in a broad portfolio of index funds. And I think one of the things that I'm coming to here is that one of the reasons that active traders think they're getting ahead is because they compare themselves to cash and not to a balanced index portfolio. All right, see? People think that when they're making 10% on their stock picks in their stock portfolio, they think they're doing really well. But the thing is, they're not comparing their stock picks to a portfolio of index funds across the globe. You know, that 10% that they're getting might pale in comparison to the 13 or 14% that you'd get in a broadly diversified portfolio of index funds. So people think they're doing really great by getting that 10% when in fact they could be lazy, get 13 or 14%, and go off and do something else with their time. And speaking of lazy, let's all take a deep breath with all this talk of recession and inflation and deflation and coming economic collapse. Relax a few minutes and enjoy this song from Admiral Twin, Good as Gold. It's good.
As good as gold. And as I play that song, just now, gold traded over $1,000 an ounce for the very first time. Berkshire Hathaway's annual report is out. In his letter to shareholders, Warren Buffett says, "You may recall a 2003 Silicon Valley bumper sticker that implored, 'Please, God, just one more bubble.' Unfortunately, this wish was promptly granted, as just about all Americans came to believe that house prices would forever rise. That conviction made a borrower's income and cash equity seem unimportant to lenders who shoveled out money, confident that HPA, house price appreciation, would cure all problems. Today, our country is experiencing widespread pain because of that erroneous belief. As house prices fall, a huge amount of financial folly is being exposed. You only learn who has been swimming naked when the tide goes out. And what we are witnessing at some of our largest financial institutions is an ugly sight." Now, it's interesting in his letter that Warren Buffett also admits a mistake that he made in investments. He says, "I have to admit a mistake when I said yes to Dexter, a shoe business I bought in 1993 for $433 million in Berkshire stock, 25,000 shares of A. What I had assessed as a durable competitive advantage vanished within a few years, but that's just the beginning. By using Berkshire stock, I compounded this error hugely. That move made the cost to Berkshire shareholders not $400 million, but rather $3.5 billion. In essence, I gave away 1.6% of a wonderful business, one now valued at $220 billion, to buy a worthless business. To date, Dexter is the worst deal that I've made. But I'll make more mistakes in the future. You can bet on that." And in the annual report, he also talks about the consequences of the falling dollar and the fact that he invested in the Brazilian real. But he concludes, "Despite our country's many imperfections and unrelenting problems of one sort or another, America's rule of law, market-responsive economic system, and belief in meritocracy are almost certain to produce ever-growing prosperity for its citizens." I hope you're right, Warren. In other scandal news, on Monday on Mad Money, Jim Cramer, the day of the scandal, the day the scandal was announced of Elliot Spitzer, Jim Cramer announced that he is a great friend of Elliot Spitzer and Mrs. Spitzer and the three Spitzer kids. But he had no idea that this was going on, and he sure felt bad for the family, and that was all he had to say about it. Well, here's what I have to say about it. What an idiot. What an absolute buffoon. You've got all the power of the New York governor. Doesn't that bring you enough joy, you fool? My goodness gracious. Isn't there any good politician other than the one we already know about?
Smoke fills the parlor, conquer.
I want to thank you so very much for joining me on Show 102. This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes whipping inflation now to make a mad money machine. I will see you next Friday. In the meantime, I would like for you to do one thing for me. Take your browser and point it to ifa.com. Take the risk capacity survey. These are risky times. I want you to know what your capacity for risk is. Don't be a part of the Fool's Brigade. I would like your feedback at feedback@madmanmachine.com, or you can call the voicemail line 206-734-4763, make a comment in the show notes, or see me on Twitter @madmanmachine.